Welcome to the Ruthlessly Efficient Marketing Podcast. I am James Adam, and I'm here with my organizational master, Gary Lee.
Is that the surprising intro you've been promising me? Thank you very much.
Surprising intro.
I will take that intro.
I felt I hadn't been bigging you up enough in previous episodes. So I thought, do you know what? It's time to give you a moniker. I'm not sure if that's the one that's going to stick. I might try and come up with a new one each and every week, which I think might be fun. But yeah, this is the Ruthlessly Efficient Marketing Podcast. We are all about helping you be more efficient in your marketing, get your marketing done, get great results, and get back to running your amazing businesses. Now, for the last few weeks, we've been talking a lot about efficiency, about how to get more organized, how to get more done. So we're going to be talking about that. It's week three. We've got some new tips to share. Gary's going to be trying out a few more of those on me. And we're going to be talking as well all about why you need to be making preparations for the day when your referrals start to dry up. So there's a lot to cover in today's episode. So let's get started.
Okay, fire away. Where do you want to start, James?
Let's start with a little review of how we're getting on with our organizational process.
Well, how are you getting on then? Because remember, for everybody who, you know, if you haven't watched listen to week one and two, you don't watch it. That would be silly. I mean, that really ruins
you could watch
point
it,
of the podcast.
Watching...
You could do, but it would be silly. Week one was all about getting James's inbox cleaned up. He had over 8,000. I don't think he admitted that at the time, but he had over 8,000 emails across his inboxes. And then week two was all about organizing your day and your week so that you're as efficient as possible. How are they coming along?
Good. It's a constant battle, I think it's fair to say. I don't think you can say I did it. I felt good after week one. I'd got my inbox in order. What I would say is it's so easy for you to fall away. I really had nailed down my one of my inboxes was perfect, another one was really coming down, but I've noticed it's starting to creep back up again. I've started focusing on organizing my day a little bit more, and as a result some of those things are starting to creep back in. So I'm getting back into it again, getting back to making sure I'm responding to people at the end of the day and getting those emails out. Converting emails into to-dos, that for me is the big takeaway. That's the big, like, don't use your emails as a to-do list. Keep looking at them and going, okay, no, that's a job. Put that over here as a job. And then make sure you remember to tell the person that you did the job, because sometimes that is the thing that we forget to do.
Yes.
But also just keep doing it. Like, there's no getting around it. If you get a lot of emails, this is going to have to be part of your life. There's no getting away from it. If you're in that sort of world, and I am, then I've got to stay on top of that. So that's been a constant battle, but I think, you know, I feel I'm winning, even if it's not perfect yet. Planning your day as well, that's been a big thing about thinking about. One of the big takeaways from last week was using those parcels of time for the right uses, really. It's thinking about when you have that little dip, when you have that moment where you're not feeling quite as productive, then give yourself something you like doing. Find something fun to do. And yeah, that's kind of how I've been approaching it. It's been, you know, those bits where I feel a bit less motivated, I pick a task that I know I'm going to be good at. Or just like this morning, I got up, I knew I got an hour, and I knew that I wanted to power through something. So I thought, yeah, I've got an article to write. I'm going to sit and I'm going to focus on that for an hour. I've got no distractions, nothing else to do. And again, it's just a really, you know, that I feel is really good. And it sets you off in such a good way for the day. You feel more productive because you've had a good start. And I think that's been a really valuable.
There is a lot to be said for making yourself feel good at the start of the day by doing something, because you then spend the next, even if you get stuck on things later on in the day, your mind keeps going, yeah, but I did that thing, didn't I? I'm still winning today.
My brain has a slight danger of going, yeah, well done, you've done a lot already today, you should kick back for the rest.
Yeah, that is always a danger. That isn't just your brain, I can promise you that. We're all the same. There is that danger.
Killed it for that first hour. Maybe just hit the brakes for a little bit. So I think there is that reminding yourself to, you know, what you want to do is you almost want to do that, then take a little break, and then hit the next hour just as hard as you hit the first one, and then try and maintain that momentum throughout the day.
Hold that thought, because there's stuff on that coming up in a tip for later, but we'll do that at the end of the podcast.
So yeah, so all in all, yeah, I think we're off to a great start. Things, I think, are looking more efficient. You know, haven't missed a meeting, haven't had to resend an email, haven't lost a link to anything. So this is all pretty positive stuff.
I can confirm that by virtue of the fact I work with you every day, I can confirm no meetings have been missed. And that is a massively, massive step forward.
Huge step forward. So yeah, that's where we're at this week. So on to our topic of the week, and that is we've been talking a lot about referrals, about people's marketing strategy. We talk a lot about marketing strategies and a lot about the different mix that you need to make up. But so many small businesses we talk to, and businesses as a whole, rely so heavily on referrals. They rely on word of mouth, people telling their friends about each other. And that's a risk, isn't it? That seems to be, you know, a massive, massive risk.
It is. It as we've said, in a classic attempt at a talking point, it's not a growth strategy. It's part of a strategy, but it's not a whole growth strategy. And as you, I think you said it to me, it's about spotting that you're relying solely on that and having proactively preparing a sales and marketing plan so that something complements it. It's important, a really, really important thing to say right at the start. Referrals are integral to any business, not just a small business, but any business. We're certainly not saying, oh, don't rely on referrals. You absolutely should be maximizing referrals. There's loads of great things you can do to get more and more referrals. We're not going to talk about that today, but there is loads, and we'll probably put that down in a blog somewhere. So referrals are critical. And I, you know, personally, and we joke about the fact that often we use things in James's past to highlight an issue, and we don't do that enough with mine. But I'm certainly guilty of not actually maximizing referrals well enough in my business. And when I look back and think that, you know, probably the four or five biggest clients all came through referrals, we probably should have made more of it. So I absolutely am a big fan, believer in referrals. But what concerns me is we talk to so many small businesses, and most of them were built on referrals. That's how they started. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's where we start with you, because effectively your business started through referrals.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you're absolutely right. Small business mostly are built on the back of referrals. And I think that comes down to size and the relationship you have with your clients or your customers, because it's more personal. People love to have a sense of ownership. They love to feel that they're part of something. So when they recommend a store, a restaurant, an agency, whatever it may be, and someone else has a good experience, they sort of bask in the reflected glory. And I think it's important to think about the psychology of why someone recommends something to somebody else, because they want to feel good about themselves making that great recommendation. So that's something that, you know, we as a small business, as you know, as my agency, we grew based on that fact that we started out because I was effectively referred from a different agency, and they came, you know, some clients started out with me, they wanted to work with me, and we grew because people liked working with us, with our team. And we grew to quite a good size from that. And, you know, what's great about referrals as well, especially if they're linked to the people, is people progress, they progress through their roles, they move on to bigger clients, to bigger businesses, and you get referrals that way. So from a B2B point of view, it's a great way to grow, because if you keep pace with the people you work with, then the same goes for your customers. If you're, you know, a restaurant or if you're a store, it's the same process. You know, the more you grow, the more you stay in touch with those people that you were with you at the beginning. You can keep growing with those, and that's great, because you get more business in and more great things come. But, and this is absolutely what happened with us, is at some point those people have recommended you to all of the people they know. They've given you all of the work they have, and they are using you in every possible way they can. And then that's it. There isn't anything else. They haven't got any more. They've got no more budget to spend. They've got no more friends to recommend you to. There's no more businesses that are relevant. That's the end of the referral thing. And it doesn't matter how good you are at farming referrals or asking for referrals or anything like that. If they don't know anyone else, they can't recommend you to anyone else. And that, and in truth, that this did absolutely happen to us. We got to that point where we saw that coming. You know, it was a little way off, so we had enough foresight to see it coming. But even so, at that point, it was still really too late, because then we started ramping up the marketing activity. We recruited a new business person. We started looking at all the different things you need to start that outreach of sales. You start that sales and marketing campaign, and it took us probably a year, if I'm honest, from the start of that to the point we started to, it started to bear fruit. And so I think that's really where this subject came from, is that people need to be preparing now for the possibility, even if it all looks rosy and it looks like there's, you know, referrals into the, you know, right out into the horizon, there's a pretty decent chance that that's going to come to an end, and you need to make that those preparations early so that you're ready for when those referrals dry up, so you start getting those new people in, and the beauty is those new people are going to start referring you as well. So that's, it's happy days then, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, as I always say, you only have so many friends, you know, at the end of the day, there's only so many friends, there's only so many people that you can actually talk to and recommend. And really what you're talking about, as you quite rightly said at the end there, is it's, you're not actually ever going to go away from referral marketing. All you're doing is you're using marketing to bring in new clients so that it expands your network of referrals. I mean, and that's what it is. As you say, eventually your initial set of referrals dry up, so you have to go and find new clients so they can start the referral process going again. And I think that's where most people make the mistake, is not going off and realizing that marketing is actually about finding new people who can be new referrals.
Yeah, it's essentially a pyramid scheme, isn't it? That is essentially what you're doing. bringing a new person that is going to recommend you to more people, and that's what you're not. I mean, it's not a pyramid scheme. That sounds extremely dodgy, but you know, you are ultimately trying to bring somebody new in, and then if you're good at the referral process, you're going to get more people based on those.
Yeah, it's a legal pyramid scheme. The whole point, yeah, but that's what networks are. I mean, if you ever look at a network diagram in a pure data geeky sense, it is a series of pyramids breaking down. I mean, that's what it is. So at the end of the day, that the more people you worked with, the more connections you've got, the more referrals you can get. So marketing just helps referrals, and that's why we call it referral marketing. Okay, so often the first thing is, it's worked so far, so why should I stop doing it? I think we've covered that pretty well, because as we said, you know, even though it's worked up to this point, you know, not everything carries on forever. And however well connected you think you are, you will eventually need to find people outside your current network. And that's really what marketing is about. Marketing is about finding new people that in other circumstances would never find you. Because by adding, you know, you are this island here, there's loads of people around you, that's your network. You need to go and find another island, because then those two islands become connected, and then there's a whole, you know, you're doubling. Essentially, as soon as you get a new client, let's say you've got a client, you go and find a new client. That client has got a referral network that doubled it straight away. Every new client doubles and doubles and doubles your referral network. And that's why it's so important to actually be planning marketing. And that's why we're, you know.
For, you know, you're a restaurant, you get a new, you know, someone new who's never tried you out before, they are going to have family, friends, all those people that are going to be a potential, you know, you're going to open yourself up to a potential new list of people that could also come, because, you know, same for a store, same for any B2C business. It works. You know, we often talk about business to business and business to consumer separately, but the principles are so much the same in terms of that referral process, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is, the strategies you then need to employ to work alongside that, they're all complementary anyway. It's not like, I think people have this idea that, like, I've always had referrals, oh god, I've got to stop marketing, that's a whole different thing. A lot of what you're doing in your referrals and to get your referrals is exactly what you need in marketing, because at the end of the day, a referral is all about doing a good job, people understanding who you are and articulating what you do. That's what marketing is. At the end of the day, you know, there is nobody better. People are always scared of doing their marketing, but at the end of the day, there's nobody better placed in the world than you to tell the world what you do, why you're good at it, and why they should work with you. And that's really what you're talking about, is just taking that message that you give to your current network and telling more people that are in different networks. It's not actually as, they're not totally different strategies. They actually work nicely alongside each other. If you start looking at some of the classic things that you can do to start building out a marketing strategy.
Yeah, I think people are sometimes, there is that weird thing where people are afraid to have those conversations. You don't want, you're perfectly, you know, one of your ongoing customers, one of your ongoing clients, you're very happy to have that conversation with. But the idea of walking up to somebody entirely new and saying, telling them about yourself or telling them about what you do or telling them about your restaurant, shop, store, hotel, whatever it may be, seems a bit mucky. Seems a bit like, oh, that's sales, and we don't like sales, do we? Because sales is dirty, and that seems to be sometimes the attitude that you hear from people.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? That's the nail on the head. Most people, when you break them down psychologically, it's not marketing that they don't like; it's sales that they don't like. It's the concept of asking people for leads. It's the concept of asking people to recommend them. But the reality is that's how your referrals are happening, and it's just taking that on, and you're just moving that into a different arena. That is literally all you're doing. You're just moving from one stage to the other. And if you think about it, stage one of building out a marketing strategy is using those referrals, is actually using testimonials. You know, you've started working with these people, you've got this good network. Stage one of moving on from just relying on referrals is to get those good customers, who, by the way, at this point are recommending to everybody. So you know they'll say nice things. Well, get them to write that down, get it on your website, get it out there on social media. So-and-so said the following about me. Isn't that amazing? That's great. They'll tell their network that, but if you tell other networks, that's step one in moving into marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, when it comes to that idea of not wanting to tell people, you know, we would always encourage people to go back to use those referrals to help you with your sales process. Go back and think about what they say. Ask your current customers what they would say when they recommend you, because sometimes I think we find people, what you think is special about your business, what you think is great. And we always talk about this when we do the What Makes You Special, you know, our workshops. We always encourage people to go back and ask their customers what they think makes them special, because sometimes what you think is amazing about your products might be that you do, you know, it does this, it's got this many widgets, it does that many things, but actually what your customers love about it might be something completely different. Maybe they just love the service, maybe they just love, you know, some other element. And that's what you can sometimes find that is the thing, because what they use to refer people should be your sales message. That should be the thing you're telling people, because that's the thing. If one person loves that about you, there's a pretty decent chance there's more people out there that are looking for that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I'll use a prime example of yesterday when we had a wrap up call on a project with a client yesterday. And I think there's a list of things, and some of the things they said would align to what we'd already say. And we, you know, about, you know, the strategy we came up with was actionable and things like that. But they also said we understood them very quickly, and we understood their language and what their motivations were and the way they talk. And I thought that was really interesting, because I feel like in a different meeting a couple of weeks ago, when we actually went to an office for the first time, probably do a whole separate podcast just on that. But similar things were said in the fact that we seem to understand them very quickly. And suddenly that's a thing that we now feel we need to put into our messaging. It's the fact that there will be other brands out there that will want to work with people that will get them and understand with them. Because it's the class. It's a horrible phrase. I've used it loads over the years, but so I do apologize. But we become part of your company. We're not an agency. We're just an extension of your own marketing team. I genuinely have used that a lot of times. But that's actually what these last two referrals have said to us. They basically said that you've become part of, you feel like you're part of the company because you've understood us. And that's a powerful thing that we can then start saying in our own messaging.
Yeah. So you've got to do that. You've got to look at, use your referrals to shape your sales message. I think that's and your marketing message. I think that's a really, really powerful thing you can be doing to help make sure that what you're pushing is actually the thing that people want, not the thing you think is important.
Yeah.
One of the other things you talked about in your blog was that people have just got to accept that you're going to have to talk to people. And I think that's something that, you know, I'm guilty of. I'm not mad keen on networking and having those first conversations. But the simple truth is, get over yourself. You want to grow, you want to get new customers, you want to meet new people. You are going to have to talk to them. If you're single and you need to find a partner, you're going to have to go on a dating website. And if you want more customers, that means you're going to have to go out there and you're going to have to start introducing yourself to new people. So, you know, how can people get over that initial fear of not wanting to have those first conversations?
It comes back. I do think actually it's the thing you said earlier, which is talk to your customers, because your customers will make you feel better about yourself way more than you ever could, because they will start saying, oh, we're this. You did a recent some interviews with one of our clients' customers. And I think even they were surprised by the level of pride with which these customers said they like working with them. And that's sort of given them an extra confidence to go out there and be a bit bolder in their marketing, because actually, you know what? People were working, say we're bloody amazing. So why shouldn't we be a bit bolder in our marketing? Why we shouldn't be embarrassed to go and tell people what we're doing. And you know, we're sitting here. It's not like either of us are absolutely perfect in this situation. And, you know, over the last couple of weeks, people telling us we've done a good job, it does. It gives us a reinforcement. It gives you that feeling that, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to actually be a bit bolder in what we do. We're going to go and start talking to people. We talked to someone this morning who was effectively looking for an expert in what we do. And they came to us as an expert. And we, you know, I think 6 months ago, we may not have been as confident going into a meeting like that. But now it's second nature to us. And I think the first stage of getting out there and just talking to people is having a bit more confidence in yourself. And the best way of doing that is getting other people to tell you how good you are, quite frankly.
Mm. Because again, it goes back to that thing is people want to feel like they made a good choice. People love, people love being the one to know about the things. People love to tell other people about that restaurant they found because they discovered it, and they want to tell you, and they want you to have a good experience. They want you to that to reflect well on them. And that's true of all things. So people do love to refer people. So you can do more to encourage that. But and again, you can take that, give yourself that boost of confidence, because that definitely makes that first conversation seem a lot less daunting. And it gets rid of that, you know, a lot of people talk about imposter syndrome. We all feel it from time to time, where you feel like, oh, I don't know, is my product that good? Is my offering that good? Is my restaurant that good, or whatever it may be? But get a few of those, you know, just give yourself a little bolster up, you know, big yourself up a little bit before you have those conversations, and you will find it's much, much easier to have them.
Yep, totally agree. Now, thinking about how you actually start to grow this stuff out, if you think about it, you're starting to make connections, you're starting to talk to people, even within your referrals. What you're actually starting to build out, and James knows I love saying talking about this, you're starting to build out a list of people. And do you know another name for a list of people? It's called a marketing database. And this is a prime example of how you do that. And it's a really good complementary thing to your referral process, because part of your referral process is getting people to give you names that you can put into your database. And then you'll start growing that, and you can start marketing to those people. Because one of the things with referrals is are generally quite quick turnaround in terms of, you know, from meeting people because you've been recommended. But a part of marketing is taking those referrals that aren't instant and nurturing them over time. And that's where you bring in a marketing database and you start communicating, you add value. And that's how you build a database. You offer people free value. So they go, oh, well, I'm really interested in that. I'll quite happily sign up to that. I'll keep in touch with what these guys are doing. I don't have a need right now. And a lot of us sell a service that people don't need right now. The whole point of marketing is to be front of mind when someone does need that service.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're almost any product, stores, restaurants, things like that, you understand that you are part of a greater landscape. People don't go to your, you know, if you're a restaurant, people do not go to eat in your restaurant every single week, but you need to, you know, some people do, but, you know, but mostly you're going to rotate between a number of different places. And so what you need to do is make sure you're constantly communicating with that person so that when they are making that decision, that they're there, especially if you're in the world of, you know, consumer marketing, you're constantly fighting with a lot of other stuff. And the decision is often made with very short-term thinking, with that, like, what's available to me right now? Who spoke to me last? What emails have I got in my inbox? What offers are there knocking about right now? And that's how people make decisions. So, you know, having that database the database doesn't have to be a huge, complicated CRM.
God, no. No, keep it simple. Keep it simple. You're a small business. And that, I think that is true. We talked about this a little bit in the past. The problem with marketing databases is that people overcomplicate things and they start to, like, a small business can happily sign up for a free HubSpot setup. Great. So it's free and it's a powerful tool. The problem is it's a powerful tool. So you could go in there and there's seven, I think there's over 7,000, maybe more fields that you could possibly fill in HubSpot. You need about three. You need to know their name. You need to know their email address. And if over time you want to add in things, and obviously permissions, but if over time you can add in a couple of things about things you know they've done, things they're interested in, things they've bought before, that's about as complex as 99% of small businesses ever need to get. And quite frankly, it's about as complicated as about 95% of all businesses need to get.
Yeah, I think that is a big part. I mean, it's a big part of everything we talk about, isn't it? Is that just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
If just because you can create all this stuff, if you aren't going to do something with it, then just don't do it, because you're going to get overwhelmed. And that's why so many people find marketing overwhelming, because of all the choices that you potentially could have. But actually, when you get down to it, you know who your customers are. You've got a list of those great customers. You know, that is a database, even if it's stored in your head. It's just formalizing it and making sure that you continually talk to those people, because you're going to, again, keep them coming back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a prime example of why ruthlessly efficient marketing exists as a concept for us, because the world is full of people trying to make marketing way too complicated. As we always say, you're a business owner, you set up your own business. Trust me, marketing is much, much simpler than running your own business. The only reason you think it's complicated is because people bandy around too many options and too many buzzwords. So really, you know, that's given you a couple of ideas of how, I suppose, why you shouldn't rely solely on referral marketing, and a couple of ideas to how to start to complement it, because it isn't an instant thing. It's to build it up over time. But we've written this down in a lot more detail. We don't want to read out a blog. That's not really the point of a podcast. So please do go to our website, 33%.co.uk. All the letters, none of the numbers. It's the first time I've ever got to say that, so I'm really excited. And if you go down to the blogs, you'll find our article all about why your referrals will dry up and what to do about it. And please do read it and let us know what you think.
Yeah, we'll put a link directly in the show notes as well. So if you are listening to this on whatever your podcast vessel of choice is, you should be able to click the link in there and head straight over to the blog to get a lot more specific, actionable detail about how you can prepare.
Specific, actionable detail. Three very good words there. Well done. I like it.
All right, so that's that. It's time for Efficiency Tips Week 3. I'm excited. I can't imagine that I could get any more efficient or organized. So I don't know where you're going to go, what I'm going to be doing in Week 8. I have no idea. But here we are, Week 3. What have you got for me, Gary?
Well, see, you gave me a big build up at the start. So I am now starting to refer to you in podcasts, in blogs, and on my posts as an efficiency ninja. That's how I'm now describing you as. But this week is a slightly different one, and I decided to do this relatively early because I think it helps inform everything else. But week three is all about taking the stress out of work, because there's no doubt about it that stressed and worried people do not make efficient workers. It is a fact. It is true, because worried, stressed, anxiety lead to bad decisions. They lead to mistakes. They lead to having to repeat loads of things, second guessing yourselves, people actively hating their jobs eventually. That is not an efficient person. So really, this week is just all about, I mean, you'll love this, this is all about me telling you about how to relax, how to stay stress-free, all these kind of things. You're actually, I think, of all the weeks, I think this is probably the easiest one for you, because I think you are relatively, you're not the sort of person who gets too stressed about things. But I think there are things that, you know, we're talking about this to the wider world. I think for me, number one, and we've sort of talked about this a little bit before, but I think this is an important one to remember. Never end your day without knowing and having a plan for what you're going to do the next day, for two massive reasons. One, because your evening will be more relaxed, and a relaxed evening is great. Two, because you will sleep well. And there is nothing better for being mentally fresh and good at your job than sleeping well. So ultimately, it's linked to this inbox idea that you should never leave unread emails when you finish the day. It's exactly the same. You should always, my single goal, and I don't always achieve this, but my single goal, most important goal of my working structure, is to always end the day knowing what I'm going to do the next day. And if that means working 15, 20 minutes a bit longer at the end of the day, it's worth it. because I will be much better in the morning, but I would also have a much better evening.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's about knowing, yourself. Like you said, I don't tend to get frazzled. I don't tend to lose sleep about work, but I do. I would say the times when I've been at my most stressed are when I feel overwhelmed, when I feel like I can't see, I've got a list of things here and I can't see how I'm going to get them all done. And usually that's because there's like some old stuff that hasn't been done when it should have been done. It's usually, I think a lot of people, this is the case where poor planning is the result of having too much stuff on your plate at any given time, because you had longer to get the thing done than the time you're presented with. It's rare that we're dumped, you know, 20 urgent jobs that are all due tomorrow. It's usually because you get 10 jobs dumped, but then you've also got the other 10 that you could have probably done a bit earlier if you'd have been planning your time a little bit more efficiently. And then that's the time when I feel like I get a little bit like, I can't see how I'm going to get all this stuff done. But again, it's that having that view of where, when it's going to get done, to know when it's going to get done, I think is really important. And I think, you know, to sort of touch on that divisions of time for me are so important, having that work time and separating that from home time, leisure time. And it's a thing I used to, you know, certainly earlier on in my career, I was very, very bad at taking the work home, leaving work and then going home and sitting on my laptop in the evening or doing other stuff at separate times. And I think it probably was born out of having a job that I didn't love that much. I wasn't having a particularly good time. And as a result, I found that when I checked my emails in the evening, or they came, when those alerts came in, it just brought me back and I was stressed and I was fed up and I was miserable. And, you know, and so it's easy to fall back into that trap when you do like your job, because you do kind of like, you don't mind checking your emails in the evening. You don't mind getting involved in that stuff. But then when something does go wrong, I don't know, it can really niggle you. And I think I really do always encourage people to stop work and say, this is not work time anymore. I'm not going to do work things. And I'm going to focus on, you know, we talked about this before as well, about being deliberate in your use of time, decide what you're going to do and do that thing. Because you will be better at it than if you're jumping about between, you know, between different things.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of things there. One is obviously it's more important than ever now, because most of us are working from home. So it's actually even easier to just never break from it.
Absolutely. Very hard.
Absolutely. Makes it very hard indeed. I see you sparked another idea in me and now it's gone out. So I'm sure it'll come back to me. The next thing really is it's going to be an odd one for you. I'm going to talk about scrambled eggs.
Okay.
I like to surprise you. You weren't expecting that.
I wasn't.
Do you know the history of Yesterday by the Beatles?
I don't think that I do. Let's assume I don't.
Let's assume you don't. And as you know, I've written a lot about the Beatles in the last 6 months. Mm. So I know a lot. And there's an amazing story about it. So for those who don't know, Yesterday by the Beatles, you'll know what that is. Because if you don't, then...
Yeah, I do know what that is.
If you've never heard of Yesterday by the Beatles, go listen to it and turn this podcast off, because we don't want you as listeners.
We'll put a little link in there.
Yeah, there you go. What a good idea. It is the most covered song of all time. Okay, that gives you an indication of how important that is as a song, and many consider it to be Paul McCartney's greatest works. And it was written by him, and although they will always be listed as Lennon McCartney, that was very much a McCartney song. The thing is, when they wrote that song, it wasn't called Yesterday, because Paul McCartney had a tune, and Paul McCartney would often have a tune, but he didn't have a song. He didn't have lyrics. And so his working title for about 6 months was Scrambled Eggs. And for example, there's a line in one of the original versions of the song, which was never going to be released, but was around the fact that you've got good legs, but I prefer scrambled eggs. And the reason that exists is because McCartney and Lennon and McCartney had this working practice, which was, we don't get fixated on something. If we're stuck, we just give it a nonsense title and we move on to other things. And that's what they did. And it was about 6 months later, while he was in a car with his girlfriend of the time, and was Jane Asher, just proving that I know loads about the Beatles, by the way. But he was in the car to a villa in Portugal and the lyrics came to him. And so he got there and wrote the lyrics when he got there. But he didn't dwell on it and it didn't cause a problem with him because he had the tune and he knew he'd come back to it. Now, that's an extreme because it's 6 months. But the point behind this is, don't, if you get stuck, put a placeholder on it, move on to something else. Whenever I'm writing, I always use the example when you're doing content writing, you'll often have a plan and then you get to one part of it and you just can't articulate it well. Could even just be a word you get stuck on. People get fixated and they get stressed by it. The idea is to just put a placeholder in, go, put that to one side and I'll move on with everything else. And that's how it's all part of de-stressing. It makes you efficient, definitely makes you efficient, because the most inefficient you can do is struggle with something you're not getting through. But it also takes the stress out of your working life because people do fixate on the smallest things. It could be within a project, it could be something you're writing, could be something you're drawing, could be just an idea you're trying to come up with.
Yeah, it's that sort of sense of diminishing returns of time as well, isn't it? The more yes. time you spend on something, the less value you're really getting from it. And so, you know, from a creative point of view, sometimes it's very important to take the time and sit with something to figure out what the answer is, to figure out what the right words are or what the design should look like or whatever else. But there definitely comes that point where you think, I'm just shuffling things around on the page, or I'm just trying new words and trying new words, and it's not getting any better. And so we always say that just get something down, put it away. If you come back tomorrow and you don't hate it, there's a pretty good chance that it's actually better than you thought it was the day before.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that's, yeah, again, that's another reason to be more organized, because it gives you time to let something sit and you don't just have to hit send as soon as you finished it, because there's a good chance that with a bit more time, you would probably be able to give it that little extra salt and pepper to get it a little bit better.
Cool. Well, look, this week is all about staying as mentally fresh as possible. So the final two little snippets really are just about, you've talked a lot about it and all the way through this, even in the referral section, but it's just about taking breaks. Make sure you take breaks at the appropriate time. Don't try and just, you know, you've got to take breaks at the right time, because I don't want you to break a thought process, but take a break at a good time and then either just take a break completely, go off and do something you really enjoy. I mean, that's one of the key things for me, is people often take a break, and he's doing air quotes now, which isn't helpful because nobody can actually see I've just done them. But there you go.
Hear it in your tone of voice, though.
Yes, you absolutely can. People say, take a break. But what do they actually do during that break? What do they do? If you're constantly on a computer and you take a break, and what you do is have 5 minutes reading
around on Facebook,
an article, yeah, on Facebook, and get depressed with what the world is, that's not taking a break. Take a complete break. Physically, it's better for you to move anyway, so get up, move around, take a slightly longer break, go and do a short bit of exercise if you want to, go and play with the kids if they're at home, if you're doing something like that. You know, if you, you know, as James and I, we love building a bit of Lego, go and build a bit of Lego for 20 minutes. I'll be honest, I did it earlier today. I'd had a fairly good morning, but I was feeling quite tired, so I went off and did a little bit more on some Harry Potter Lego. There mm-hmm. we go. I felt better as a result of doing it. Whatever it is that you enjoy doing, every now and again, give yourself a break, go and do that, and give it a proper break. It doesn't mean you have to go away for, you know, you don't work, by the way, I'm just making this clear for James's sake. Doesn't mean work for an hour, take an hour off, work for an hour, take an hour off. I think that's a bit extreme, but it's about taking, when you have a break, take a proper break.
Yeah.
What you're doing is resetting your mind.
It's being deliberate, isn't it? With that time, saying I'm taking a break and I'm doing a thing in that break.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to come back and do the thing I was going to do next, rather than just sort of ambling around and not, you know, and I think that's true even more so at home, where you might have, in an office, you might have gone and stood in the kitchen and made a cup of tea and had a bit of a chat, or, you know, done something specific, gone for a walk at lunchtime to get a sandwich or whatever else. But we don't do any of that anymore. So it's so easy to just go to the kitchen, grab something, come and sit back down, or just stand up and eat your lunch, because that's so much quicker than sitting down. And then away you go. Whereas if you were back in the old world, you would be taking more deliberate breaks.
And for those who don't, that is an in jab at some friends of ours who seem to think that anybody who sits down and has their lunch is an idiot. As the efficiency master, as you described me earlier, and you're an efficiency ninja, I don't think either of us can ever afford to sit down ever again.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Well, thank you very much, Gary. That's some great. Was there any more tips before?
No, that I was literally going to say. Let's go home.
All right. Well, excellent. That's some. You know, again, that's 3 weeks of absolute gems. And there's 8 weeks still, and there's still 5 more weeks of amazing efficiency tips. And I did that sum in my head. So make sure you subscribe. I mean, if there's ever been a bigger reason to subscribe than that, I don't know what it is.
Can't imagine what week 7's going to be. So exciting.
I can't imagine. But yes, please do subscribe. We'd love to have you back here each and every single week. Next week, we're going to be talking all about how you can make the most of the pent-up demand that comes from the fact that we've got freedom on the horizon. We are hoping we're going to be let out, unlocked, and allowed to go and enjoy shops, al fresco dining, all those things, just mere weeks away. So it's all very, very exciting. But until then, like we said, you can find all of our information at 33%.co.uk. That's all letters and none of the numbers, where you can find out all about all the various things that we do, courses, workshops, the kind of stuff to help you master your marketing and get it done in a ruthlessly efficient manner. But until next time, we will see you next week.
Goodbye.